We're very honored to be joined by Colonel Ronald D. Ray, U.S. Marine Corps, retired. And Colonel Ray is a practicing attorney in Kentucky and a highly decorated combat veteran of the Vietnam War, two Silver Stars and a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. He served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration and was appointed by President Bush to serve on the American Battle Monuments Commission from 1994 and on 92 Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces from 90 through 94. He served as a military historian and Deputy Director of Field Operations for the U.S. Marine Corps Historical Center. Washington, D.C., Colonel Ray, selected for Who's Who in America and American Law, writes and speaks on a wide range of national security, historical, and constitutional issues, and has appeared on a variety of national television news broadcasts from ABC World News Tonight to Larry King Live, Hannity and Combs, Fox and Friends, The Today Show, Crossfire, and a number of other national radio broadcasts. And, of course, he is the lawyer who valiantly and brilliantly defended Michael New, and I've, of course, seen him in a documentary made about that. He, of course, was the lawyer for former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas Moore, who was a great hero of this country and a frequent guest in years past. The now late Moore died 2 years ago. And he is a friend of Major General Black, who we had on a few weeks ago. His main focus, of course, has been the destruction of our military, exposing that and exposing the UN, the New World Order takeover operations. And we are honored to have Colonel Ronald D. Ray with us today. Colonel, thank you for joining us.
Alec, the honor's mine. Good to be on your show. You've had a terrific, group of guests that have gone on before. It's just company I'm so proud to be a part of.
Well, thank you for joining us. You know, in college, they told us that the New World Order was good, that America was going to be merged into an American Union. Then I'd turn on CNN, and they said kooks talked about it. It didn't exist. Now Lou Dobbs admits we're going into an American Union. Now mainstream publications admit we're going into a New World Order. Our borders are being erased. Women are being put in frontline positions. Our troops are going under UN control. First off, tell us a little bit about yourself, your awakening to this global system, and then get into what you think is the most important facts concerning this, and then how we defeat it, how we save this country.
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I was commissioned in '64 in the Marine Corps, and that summer I was a Goldwater Republican, and that summer I heard Ronald Reagan's speech in there, and I became a Goldwater Reagan kind of supporter. Served my 5 years active duty. I was at Way City during the Tet Offensive. The first breach for me came when Walter Cronkite came, where we were fighting, and the temperatures got down into the 40s. Up there, there was still some monsoon up there. We didn't have the air we needed in Way City. I was with the Vietnamese Marines. U.S. Marines took half of the city, the southern half of the city, and it was the pivotal point of the Vietnam War, essentially, focused on this. And Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America, came up in 08, 9, 10, February at some point, safely south of the Perfume River. He told the world that the Tet Offensive was a great strategic setback for the United States. It was a victory for the North Vietnamese. It proved there was no light at the end of the tunnel, and the best that the Americans could hope to do was to begin to negotiate. There was no possibility of victory.
When you had actually repulsed 90% of the attack, is that accurate?
No question. It was, anybody can attack you. A smaller force can attack a larger force, and doesn't mean they won't be wiped out. The VC, the Viet Cong, were never an effective fighting force again after the Tet Offensive. They identified themselves, gave us a chance to wipe them out. After Tet, it was really North Vietnamese main force units against U.S. units and some of the better Vietnamese units like the Airborne and the Vietnamese Marine Corps that I fought with. But, it's hit me. I could see what we were doing. It was almost a World War One kind of fight, because the 8-inch was bouncing off these huge walls around this ancient, like a European walled city. And so it was fought with small arms and, machine guns and mortars. Rules of engagement were pretty horrific.
Is Full Metal Jacket's portrayal of that city battle, is that accurate?
Well, yeah, a little bit. A little bit, I think. You just don't get the flavor of it was cold and there was a lot of rain and it lasted 30 days. So, it was maybe more, it was really tough. U.S. Marines did a great job. The Vietnamese Marines held their own in there and did a good job. And that was another thing. They were always reporting that the Vietnamese didn't care, didn't want to fight, and it wasn't their country. And I spent a year fighting with those guys, and I never lost a night's sleep. They were really wonderful soldiers. The point was, Cronkite told a huge lie. It was picked up by the media monopoly back here in this country and repeated. And I came home on the 21st of March, 68, and within 10 days, my commander-in-chief, you know, Lyndon Johnson, you know, essentially said he wasn't going to run for re-election, and I knew there was a connection between the lie that had been told at Way City, where I could see the truth for myself, and I knew there was a connection between that and Johnson stepping down. And eventually I got a tour behind me and went to recruiting duty and knew there was something wrong and the problem was here.
And to boil it down, there were backroom deals going on. Our government didn't want to win that war.
Well, that became apparent to me later. I mean, think about it. It's a country the size of the state of Mississippi. How many people could you handicap the outcome of whether the United States against a country the size of the state of Mississippi would take 21 years, 58,000 killed, and we come out on the wrong end of that? It takes a lot of work to make that kind of outcome occur. But I went to law school with the idea of getting involved in politics and finished second in my class in law school. Didn't learn anything about the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. That only came later. But I learned legal process. Got involved in the Reagan's effort against Ford in 76. And then when he was elected in 80, he brought a lot of Marines and a lot of guys like me got chances to serve in the Reagan administration. So I got to see government up close, worked for Cap Weinberger. And then I worked for George Herbert Walker Bush, and it was while I was serving on the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Military that it all came home to me. We're in Los Angeles, in your backyard out there, and David Horowitz was a witness. And there were 15 commissioners. Dick Cheney had appointed recommended 15 commissioners, and 14 of the 15 were already in favor of women in combat. The Bush White House kicked five of the worst off and put five folks that knew that there was a profound difference between men and women, you know, on that commission. And so here we were, $4 million of taxpayers' money to see if there's any difference between men and women that has military significance. Just like the Vietnam analogy, how hard is it to figure out? You were probably 6 or 7 years old and you understood that for sports purposes, men and women were profoundly different. The boys ran harder and hit harder and threw the ball further and, you know, you could understand the reasons why there weren't any women on the New York Giants football team. But in any event, here we are in L.A., and it's split about 7-7 with Max Thurman, the former vice chief of staff of the Army, who led the operation in Panama. And he hadn't decided which way he was going to go. And David Horowitz, a supposed conservative, who supposedly had a political conversion after the Black Panthers murdered a friend of his in cold blood and supported Reagan. And he basically, the sum of his testimony, and he and I were together at Quantico the next year during the thing about homosexuality in the armed forces under Clinton, but this is what he said in essence between those two testimonies. He said, "I was raised as a Bolshevik dedicated to the subversion and overthrow of this country. We captured all your institutions by the late 60s except the armed forces. And we did realize this protracted war wasn't doing the job on the military we hoped. We in council and meetings, we planned and determined that the best way to finish the job on the military was to promote the notion of women in combat and homosexuality in the armed forces." Now, I'm sitting there, you know, as a Vietnam combat veteran, I'm realizing I'm looking at one of the guys who was really doing the job on us while I was 9,000 miles away fighting the wrong enemy. And I thought about what he said, and by the way, I came up and introduced myself to him and asked, I said, "David, you said you had all of our institutions except the military. Tell me about the seminaries and the churches." And he gave this wolfish kind of smile and let me know that maybe nothing had really changed, because he said, "You know, we got them first. They were the easiest." And I think from that moment on, I became an engaged activist, let's put it that way. I realized that the problem was the enemy from within, not the enemy from without. And I started being a real active to try to learn what I didn't know about my country's history. I began being a student of history. And then I got a call from folks who used to work with Jesse Helms, and they'd seen me on Larry King Live. That same month, I was on Larry King Live debating the nation, homosexuality in the armed forces with Larry Korb, CFR, former Assistant Secretary of Defense when I was in the building, and then at the Brookings Institute at the time, and a backseat driver in his uniform who claimed that he was homosexual. So I had that debate, and I got a call, and these guys said, you won't believe what's going on in the Senate Select Committee on POWMI Affairs, chaired by John Kerry. And I said, would you be willing to look at the evidence that's being kept out of those hearings? And I said I would. These were serious men, Vietnam veterans, former CIA officials, guys that had worked in the Senate for years. They took me through the evidence of the fact that it was overwhelming that we left over 700 men, abandoned over 700 men behind. And at the end of that commission hearing, I determined not to go back to my normal law practice, but I wrote the book on the first book, Military Necessity and Homosexuality, about all the reasons why sodomy, among other immoral and dissolute behaviors, were always against the law, were always criminal in the United States Armed Military, going all the way back to 1775. And I began to realize that it was worth that the principles undergirding the American military were still in place.
Well, when we get back, Colonel, I want to fast forward to what happened with Michael New, to the globalists, to the American Union, to the people that are in control of our government now, what's happening, you know, their overall overarching plan, and then hopefully ways to turn this around. We'll be back after a quick break with Colonel Ronald D. Ray, U.S. Marine Corps, retired. We've got a lot of questions for him, a lot of key points that are going to be coming up, so you'll all want to stay with us. And we may even have time to take a little bit of calls here at the end of this hour at 1-800-259-9231. I'm Alex Jones. The websites are jonesreport.com and infowars.net. Check them out. Colonel Ray, getting down to brass tacks, we know it's bigger than just the communists. We know that there's a larger program. We know that the big banks, the elite of the world, want to consolidate power. They want to consolidate control. They'll use any mechanism, as Carl Quigley at Georgetown, Bill Clinton's political science professor, openly wrote in Tragedy and Hope. The American Union, the NAFTA highways, the amnesty programs, Bush signing on to UNESCO and the UN, administration after administration, especially since George Bush Sr. and then Clinton, this is just ongoing. Who are we facing? Who is trying to set up this one world government?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You can look at, you're asking me now to give you some insight on that from my perspective.
Yes, sir. Let's jump right into it.
Okay, let me say what I think where we have to start. What's the most important ground for us to retake first? And this is where you come in and the great job you play. Daniel Boorstin, when he was coming up to be librarian of the Library of Congress, and most Americans don't even know who the librarian of the Library of Congress is or that he's the most important historian in the world at any particular one time, because he's the guy who's supposed to answer the questions historically and give the lawmakers what they need. He said in 1961 that we live in a world, Americans live in a world of pseudo-facts, which is created for them by their own media. So that what we need to do is get a hold on, like, even people like David McCullough, Skull and Bones from Yale, but a pretty good historian, a readable historian, gave the keynote address in 2002. He said, we've raised a generation of historical illiterates which is dangerous to American liberty. We face a foe today who believes in enforced ignorance. We don't. And he got a standing ovation from a largely elite liberal, what would be called liberal urban crowd that gathered there for the National Book Fair in October of 2002. Got a standing ovation. But I saw it live on C-SPAN, and I stood up, and I thought it was a great thing. So here's something that across the spectrum people can agree on, that we face a foe today. Now, in 2002, he wasn't talking about Islamic radicals. He was talking about the people that would constitute the ACLU and the NEA and their funders and groups like that has cut us off from who we are as Americans. And the great lie people want to believe is that I'm only one person and I can't make a difference. You know, we need to go back to the founding fathers. We got the Declaration of Independence. We're 231st Independence Day coming up on Tuesday, and it's a great time for people to go back and look that how important it is to participate in public affairs, to understand that most of the things you hold and believe are pseudo-facts. I mean, to come to that place where you realize that you need to learn what's really going on, which means you need to know the past. The grandson of Benjamin Franklin, Benjamin Franklin Bache was thrown in jail during the alien and sedition business, standing up for the way you stand up. You'll probably wonder sometime when they're going to come knock on your door for saying the things that you say. But here's what he said, and every one of your listeners should take this to heart this weekend when they think about what the Declaration of Independence, which was a stand based on the laws of nature and of nature's God against tyranny, against an occupation. Liberty will never be safe or durable in a republic till every citizen thinks it is as much his duty to take care of the state as to take care of his family, and until an indifference to any public question shall be considered as a public offense. And that was 1792 when he made that declaration, and he'd already gone to jail. I think that's where we start. You know, I've got to be able to take over the things that I'm responsible for, and I've got to be engaged and involved, and that means I need to know that I'm not acting on. Solzhenitsyn said it. The last essay he gave before he left the Soviet Union was forced out and came to exile in the United States of America. He wrote an essay called "Live Not by Lies," and his point was you have to know the truth, and you can't live by a lie. And he makes the point in there that every lie is capable of being exposed and will eventually be exposed by brave men willing to stand up and declare the truth. He said the partner of the lie has to be violence, because that's the only way you can force people who know the truth to live a lie or to be silent in the face of a lie. So I think those are important principles.
Well, here's a lie, Colonel, and we're about to break. Come back with a long segment, plenty of time to talk. Here's a lie. We're told that George Bush is a conservative when he spent more money than all presidents before him combined. He's setting up the American Union. He signed the deal. Your comment.
Well, I think, this neoconservative takeover of the government in the last 6 years is the destruction of the things that Barry Goldwater would have been running for in 64, and even the things that Ronald Reagan said he supported. The conservative movement in this country has almost been neutered as a result of this administration.
Well, I agree with you, and then we've got all these neocon talk show hosts there to really pacify real conservatives while the takeover is completed. We'll be right back. I've read some of the essays of our guest. I've seen him interviewed on national television, watched a documentary concerning Michael New that he's in, and we're really honored to have him, and time is running out here on us. I know we've already got a lot of callers. I want to specifically talk to him. We'll do that before this hour ends. He's Colonel Ronald D. Babe, and we've got links to some of the websites and organizations that he works with up on Infowars.com. Colonel, I want to get into the UN and how our country's losing its sovereignty and how the CFR openly is pushing for that. And I don't know how far you want to go on this, but you talk about truth. You talk about how important it is to just put all the marbles or all the chips, all the cards on the table. My new film, Terror Storm, is about government false flag terror. And it starts off with Hitler firebombing his own Reichstag, setting up the Poles with the attack on Gleiwitz, claiming that the Poles had attacked the German radio station. That's admitted to be staged. We get into the CIA in 53, overthrowing Mossadegh by carrying out terror attacks and blaming it on him. That's at CIA.gov. You're a historian. I'm sure you're aware of that. And then we look at some of the events that have happened in recent times. And I'm not going to get into what you privately talked about with Kevin, but I would like to hear from you, sir, on your view on the war on terror and the feasibility of supposed al-Qaeda carrying out the attacks of 9/11.
Well, it's a little bit like the point I made about the Vietnam War. If you sit down, look back, and say, all right, let's war game this in 1955, a country the size of the state of Mississippi is going to take on the United States. What's the outcome of that going to be? How long is it going to last? Nobody would handicap 21 years and 58,000 killed, and that we'd come out on the short end of the stick. Nobody would do that.
We weren't even allowed to bomb the North. Bottom line, invade the North, invade with troop carriers, go up through the middle, take them over from all sides, right?
Well, actually, it's simpler than that. And Admiral Moore confirmed all this for me when I had the privilege of getting to know him over a period of time from about 1993 to till his death. He wanted and advocated when he became chief of naval operations the simple thing here: 85 to 90% of the war-making capacity of North Vietnam came through Haiphong Harbor. Mining Haiphong Harbor cuts off their capacity to wage war. You know, an army fights on its stomach and all the stuff it gets. And you probably know the work of Anthony Sutton. Anybody out there that's a Vietnam veteran wants to understand that needs to read. Anthony Sutton is the best enemy money can buy. He was a fellow at the Hoover Institute. who put together the truth about the technology transfer.
So we know the globalists. We know the globalists ate our enemies, build them up, staged these wars. What about terror, sir? I mean, come on.
The first one, and I'm sure you've said this, and I'll say the first comment I made was we have $500 billion. Roughly a budget for years. That's been our whole national security, off-budget, black ops, a whole thing. $500 billion a year and we can't defend our own Pentagon. Does that dog hunt? Not in Kentucky it doesn't hunt. it doesn't. It really doesn't. $500 billion a year and a bunch of guys in a cave over in the Pakistan, Afghanistan somewhere were able to penetrate that $500 billion network that's supposed to provide the Americans with national security. Now,
well, sir, is that not the greatest conspiracy theory of them all?
Well, here's the next point I would make about that. And I think our side, let me say this, people like you and Stan Monteith and people all across the country, the work's been done. It's all gathered there. If people can get a hold of it, they can make their understanding. They need to be careful. When we go into the court of public opinion, we can win cases in the mainstream without coming across to the normal American who's still living full of pseudo-facts where we sound extreme. Let me say this. If the war on terror was real, then the first thing that would have happened within a matter of weeks after 9/11 would have been that we'd have closed the borders off. That would have been an absolute outcry. That would have been the first... Because if you're not a nation, if you have no national security if your borders are not secure.
And, Colonel, we know, without a shadow of a doubt, that the border is less secure now than it was before 2001.
That absolutely seems to be the case. And I had friends who were in the Pentagon, I'm sorry, in Congress, working with people in Congress who were working on that issue back in the early 80s and gave me some insights into it. A fellow that used to work for Bob Dornan as his staff assistant wrote a book called Importing Revolution that basically we were not only not protecting the borders, but the people who were coming in were particularly aggressive and pernicious sort that were going to be a threat to the American people.
Well, Colonel, what about this? Yeah, I mean, importing revolution, importing balkanization. We know that the government has expanded after 9/11. We know they've been doing everything they can to dismantle the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. And then we look at the supposed hijackers trained at U.S. military bases, confirmed the dean of the Defense Language School went public, San Jose Mercury News, and said, I was forced to train some of these people. I interviewed embassy heads who said that they flagged them as terrorists, were ordered by the CIA to let them in because, quote, they were part of a secret government anti-terror program and worked for us. I know you're aware of that. You're a very well-informed person.
Some of those things I've looked at closely. I've been working really hard on the prayer in the armed forces. We got a bill through the House and the Senate this time, supporting it, and within 30 days of Bush signing it into law, the Air Force puts out on February the 9th a hostile to prayer regulation signed off on by the Chief of Staff of the Air Force and the Air Force Secretary. So I mean, here, you know, Congress speaks and the executive branch does exactly what they want to.
Colonel, just getting back to 9/11 here briefly. Put as many cards as you can on the table. 9/11, this event, the official story. Is the official story possible?
You know, I tell you, I'm not an expert on 9/11. I've certainly read Dennis Cuddy's pieces. Dennis, I think, has done some really wonderful research since he left the Reagan administration when he saw us import the Soviet techniques of indoctrination into the United States there in 85 when he was at the Department of Education. Look, let's talk about this. From my standpoint, things that I do know. Project Bojinka, the fact that when the World Trade Center was hit in 93, the criminal investigation that followed produced one or two computers that were instrumental in the convictions that I think were obtained in 1995, and the program that was executed in September of 2001 was described on there. The targets, the methods, the means were all described.
And then Bush said he never heard of.
And then they all stood up. All of our leaders stood up from the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor. Others stood up, and you heard them say, and I don't know whether Bush actually said it, I know Condoleezza Rice said that, you know, none of us could have ever imagined that what happened, the hijacking and using the planes as a missile to fly into the Pentagon and the World Trade Center. None of us could have imagined this could have happened. since the FBI and the security agencies had that information from 95 on, just imagine if Hitler had had the overlord operation for 6 years before we invaded at the Normandy beaches, we'd have never gotten ashore because he would have had defenses there.
Sure. Are you aware of Operation Northwoods, Colonel?
I have seen some of those documents. Dr. Monteith sent me some of those documents that they that a planned exercise to harm Americans, to blame it on a false flag operation, to blame it on the Cubans so that we could justify an action against the Cubans.
From your knowledge in the Pentagon and in the White House, I mean, our government's declassified many false flags they carried out. I mean, give us your view on false flag ops, and for those who don't know what they are, will you tell us?
Well, let me give you an example of a false flag operation. The attack on the USS Liberty by Israel in June of 1967, I think there were 37 American sailors that were killed, largely unarmed, an unarmed American ship.
An attempt to blame it on Egypt?
And an attempt to blame it on Egypt. That ship was supposed to be sunk. It was really a miracle, and literally, and Admiral Moore said it was a miracle that that ship didn't sink with a hole, one of those torpedoes, a dead hit amidships. The hole was big enough to put, you know, a large, a fairly good-sized house inside of, and it did not go down, and the idea was to blame it on Egypt and encourage the United States to retaliate.
Exactly. I interviewed one of the admirals who was on the phone when LBJ came on and said, that GD ship's going to the bottom, you know, recall the wings.
Actually, more of what he, when with the 6th Fleet commander, as soon as it was radioed out, that was also a miracle because the first strike on there was to take out the communications capability so they couldn't radio the help, and they, even though they took out most of it, there was an SOS was sent out. 6th Fleet automatically launches from the aircraft carrier American strike planes to come to the aid of the Liberty, and they were recalled, and the Admiral, to his credit, when Robert McNamara, I believe McNamara was still Secretary of Defense there in June of 67, ordered them to return. The Admiral said that he wouldn't follow the orders of the Secretary of Defense, and Johnson came on the line. As I understand it, Johnson came on the line and said, "Admiral, you recall those you call those ships right now." And to which the admiral said, "They're killing our sailors out there." He said, "I don't care how many GD sailors get killed. I'm not going to embarrass a good ally."
Yeah, in fact, I've had one of the admirals on who talked to the admiral that heard it, and then I had one of the individuals on who actually heard it, and it was, well, I don't want to say the quote again, but yeah, it was even worse than that.
Well, it was to that effect, and you know, that's a classic false flag operation. Simply means to carry out, in other words, deception is the heart of all warfare. So the notion is, if I can attack the enemy and leave a flag, that comes from the old idea that you would run up a different flag when you were going to attack somebody at sea.
British ships.
Yeah, on the ships, and you'd have somebody else, and then they would know that if it was unsuccessful, or even if it was, you know, the British ship was flying a French flag against a Spanish vessel, and the Spanish would think it was the French, not the British, who did it.
That's, and it was really the British. Well, I mean, you're a historian, but I'm sort of a novice on British naval history. It's so interesting. The British were really the experts at that, and they would even put on, say, a neutral country's uniforms. They'd paint the ship up that way. They'd be flying its flags, and you're right. If they weren't successful, the board, and then get rid of everybody, they would then, you know, basically attack it and then break off and try to blame it on another country.
No question about it, and if you want to know what the origin of the CIA is, go back to the OSS, and who put the OSS together for the United States? British intelligence, and Williams Stevenson, and that the man called Intrepid, and that whole business. And there's some new material out that would show you. See, the good book says there's nothing new under the sun, and so if you don't know, if you know history, I mean, you mentioned the Reichstag fire, which was obviously came to mind in Oklahoma City. When people were looking at that, but let me read a quote from Franklin Roosevelt. I like to say that a page of history, and this is something that Oliver Wendell Holmes said in the Supreme Court opinion, a page of history is worth a volume of logic. So when you get down to the pages of history, this is a letter that Dennis Cuddy sent me. You may have a copy of it. And you may be familiar with it, but I think it's very relevant when you were saying, who is this? Who is this doing this? Roosevelt on November 21st. On White House stationery with his signature on it, 1933, so he's only been in office 6 or 7 months, writing to Colonel Mandel House, who was the alter ego in the White House to Woodrow Wilson. And when Wilson campaigned in 1916 on He Kept Us Out of War and the plans for getting us into World War One were already drawn up, this is what, it's really a personal letter in many ways, but there's a paragraph in there. Colonel E.M. House, November 21st, 1933, White House stationery, quote, "The real truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that a financial element in the larger centers has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. And I'm not wholly accepting the administration of W.W. Woodrow Wilson. The country is going through a repetition of Jackson's fight with the Bank of the United States, only on a far bigger and broader basis." So, you know, it's love of money is the root of all evil, and what he's saying is follow the money trail.
Exactly. Before we take a few calls and spend a little bit of time on the UN and Michael Nukes, Colonel, is it safe to say, or is this statement that accurate, that you smell something rotten in the state of Denmark when it comes to 9/11?
I think that I'm astounded that the conspiracy theory advanced by the administration could in fact be true, and the evidence does not seem to suggest that that's accurate. That's true. I think that's as true as the evidence that the war, our involvement in Vietnam, could last nearly 21 years and we come out on the short end of the stick, when in point of fact we could have won the war by bombing Hanoi and mining Haiphong, which we did in 73. We could have done that in 65.
I agree. Who's up first here, guys? Ryan in New Jersey, you're on the air with Colonel Ronald Ray.
Hi, Alex and Colonel. It's good to be able to talk to you. Alex, thanks so much for all the things you do. I'm like one class away from being a history teacher, and you've turned my complete perspective all around on history and social events. So thank you very much for that. But as far as what you and the Colonel were going to get into at the UN, I don't know, did you see or read Congressman Ron Paul's speech last night?
No, I didn't.
It's excellent. And as far as the UN that you were going to get into, he even mentioned in the speech a little bit, it was all about what the citizens are getting angry about, and about the war and social programs going wrong.
We have the congressman on every month. He's scheduled to be on in 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've been following you for a while. I've heard him plenty of times. He goes into how we can't be in the UN, and if we are carrying out UN resolutions, that we're actually giving up our national sovereignty.
Let me get a comment, and I appreciate your call. Let me get a comment from Colonel Ray on that. I mean, of the cornucopia of things the UN is doing, what do you think is most important?
Boy, obviously, it seems to me Mao said that political power goes out of the barrel of a gun, so obviously their ability to make use of the world's armed forces, including the U.S. armed forces. What I was doing in the Michael New case, there were two things that were important for me in that case. Number one is, I wanted to make sure that Michael, the reason I took the case was because Michael New was asking a question that was entirely appropriate to his rank. It wasn't going to be like the Vietnam challenges, or it was an immoral or illegal war, where some NCO or some junior enlisted man wanted to challenge it. I thought that was extremely, extremely important, and that therefore he basically said, uniform regulation said that that no foreign badges shall be worn on the battle dress uniform. That was regulations passed by Congress for everybody in the Army. Who's the expert in the military on uniforms? NCOs, not officers, not generals. It's NCOs. And so he asked a question, by what authority? And I helped him with this letter, and it was his letter, up the chain of command.
But it's even more
by
simple.
By what authority do you ask me to wear the badge, the flag, the insignia, and the uniform of another government?
And they wouldn't answer it.
No, they didn't answer it. It went all the way up and came all the way, and they said, do it or else. In other words, political power goes out of the barrel of the gun. If you
so
don't
he's
do
got
this,
the
we're
law,
going to prosecute you and throw you in jail.
He's got the law. He's got the code. He's following the law. They're telling him to break the law without showing him another law. It's simple. He swore an oath to the Constitution, to the American people, and then they tried to tell him that he was going to be a mercenary there in Macedonia for the UN.
Well, and it was really interesting that when I did the discovery, and I was supposed to get a lot of documents turned over in December, of 95, and the trial was going to be in January of 96, and they withheld, I think, three or four presidential letters signed by Bill Clinton. And when we got a hold of those, it made it clear that Clinton lacked the authority to order the Macedonian operation.
When we get back, tell us how that ended with Michael New and We will continue and take two final calls from Chris and Ron. That's all we have time for. Bob Dacey will be in studio with us talking about the American Union, the NAFTA highways that are being built just a few miles from where I sit here in Austin, Texas. We'll be right back with Colonel Ronald D. Ray. Colonel Ray, how did that end with Michael Nunes' case?
Well, they what they did was in the trial they excluded we made a motion to dismiss which should have been granted, and what they did, because it was an illegal order, and we proved it. We actually surveyed every UN Security Council resolution since the founding of the UN, and there'd never been an operation, a Chapter 6 UN military operation, which Clinton said it was in the letter.
So by color of law, they were just attempting to set a precedent to hand our military over to United Nations control.
But it's interesting, with the evidence excluded, in other words, he ordered the jury to find that it was an illegal order, which is a fact question that juries are supposed to determine. The military judge did. In fact, the prosecutor, a West Point graduate, who secreted the documents and then lied to the judge about the fact that claiming that he turned them over and we somehow overlooked documents on White House stationery, actually signed by the President of the United States. The jury, when they heard the limited case we were able to put on, realized that somehow the chain of command had failed this young man in terms of guidance. While he was convicted and given a bad conduct discharge, they refused the prosecutor's very zealous at trying to throw the maximum time in a really tough German military prison.
All right, let's take a call from Chris in Kentucky, your home state. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. Colonel Ray, you spoke at our Libertarian Party about several years ago, locally.
Oh, hello, Chris. I remember. Yes, thank you.
Yes, it's good to hear your voice again, and I'm so honored to have you on, and seeing as I've woken up onto a lot of issues. But we have to remember our veterans, the illnesses from the past, Agent Orange in Vietnam, and now we're getting this depleted uranium all over Iraq, and these soldiers are going to get a lot sicker and more vaccinations. This is all about control, all about just misery of the UN.
There's no question about it, and there are issues that are before the Congress now, and the Veterans Affairs Committee. This administration's been particularly miserable. Jim Nicholson is the VA secretary in that. Like, my son was in Iraq last year. His unit was mobilized in Roanoke, Virginia. The equipment that they had over there was abysmal. But those things that people will wake up, get rid of the pseudo facts, understand there are plenty of lawful, legal things we can do to make a difference. A lot of times when the bad things happen in Washington or in your state capital, it's because we're not there and the truth isn't on the table.
Evil men need to flourish is that good men and women do nothing. Thanks for the call, Chris. Last call, Ron in Texas. Quickly, Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Hey, be sure to say hello to Bob for me. I used to work with you guys down at Access Studios doing guest stuff for George Humphrey. I've got just a quick comment and an important question for your guest. Comment was, I was just watching KVU Midday News looking for the weather because it started raining here in Atlanta, which is rare. And they had this story on about a woman who had a warrant issued and was pulled over by the police because she had an overdue library book. Police stayed alert.
I appreciate your call. In a tyranny, Colonel, isn't it true that they make the most petty things criminal as a way to net the general population?
It's to intimidate. Remember that the Sun Tzu, all the great theorists always said the greatest way to if you can win without fighting, if you can win without fighting, and the idea is to intimidate. The idea is tyrannize. You know, if you look at what percentage of the IRS budget, for example, actually about 70-80% of it, a significant portion of the IRS budget, it just goes to pay for its existence and its activities. What has it done? People are scared to death of the IRS. So that one of the things you have to do is understand that you need to know who you are and you need to know how to conduct yourself in a responsible way.
Well, it's clear, Colonel.
We'll make a difference if we'll show up.
Colonel, it's clear that the government's trying to terrorize us at every level.
I think that that's true. I think that that's the war. That war on terror is terrorizing the citizens.
Colonel, I want to get you back on to get more into the United Nations and the new case in the future. Thank you for spending time with us.
Happy to do it, Alec. Enjoyed being with you and appreciate it. Keep doing what you're doing to educate people and wake them up.
I'll try, sir. God bless you.
You too. Bye.